the latest on COVID-19 from Maine hospital leaders. Last week, Maine hospitals set a record they never wanted to reach, a record number of patients on ventilators struggling with COVID-19. In some ways, it is like two different worlds in Maine right now. Those who view the pandemic as practically over, and others who have been hit hard by it. For hospital employees and those who have lost loved ones, this resurgence has been particularly grueling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we check in with leaders of Maine's largest healthcare systems about the latest on COVID-19. What are they learning about the Delta and Mu variants? How do testing delays affect the state's response? How is the surge in COVID cases affecting other medical procedures? Maine Calling is next. But first, this news update. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. The COVID-19 cases are rapidly rising, and hospitals are seeing record numbers in their ICUs, while outbreaks across the state are on the rise as well. Joining me to give us an update and answers to your questions, Dr. Dora Mills, Chief Health Improvement Officer at Maine Health, and Dr. James Jarvis, Senior Physician Executive and System Incident Command at Northern Light Health. They both help coordinate their health systems, pandemic response, and both are very much involved in the state's response as well. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page or to Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Thank you again, both of you, for joining us on Maine Calling, as has been the case for the last several programs that you've joined us for, both of you. It's been a Monday morning. That means you've come into all sorts of numbers. And Dr. Jarvis, I'll start with you. What kind of numbers are you facing on this Monday morning? What are you seeing? What is going on the hospitals that you are in your system and that treat COVID-19 patients?
Yeah, thanks, Jen. Thanks for having us back again. So unfortunately, came in this morning with yet new higher numbers. Across Northern Light Health, we have about 66 individuals who are being treated for COVID-19 as inpatients, with the bulk of those being at Eastern Maine Medical Center, about 50 individuals currently. Of course, this is a fluid situation, and so things change, you know, almost minute to minute now. I think that the thing that's stark to me, though, is coming in this morning and seeing that our positivity rate, and remember, that's the total number of positive tests divided by the total number of tests done, for our entire health system now is 11.5% over the last 2 weeks. And just over the last week, 12.65%. Those are alarming numbers. Those are numbers that we have not seen before at any other time in the pandemic. And I know people have been saying, oh, that's because you're only doing some, you know, a small amount of tests, or you're only testing specific people, but that's not true. We just set another record last week for the number of tests we have run at the Northern Light Health Lab. So we are testing record numbers of individuals, and they're coming back with record numbers of positive cases, which is translating then again into these serious conditions in our hospitals, with many of these individuals requiring intensive care, as many as between 25 and 50% of individuals requiring intensive care. And again, we never saw that at any other time during the pandemic.
Mm. Dr. Mills, what about at Maine Medical Center and the other hospitals in the Maine Health System?
Yes, very similar. It's interesting, but very sad to hear what Jim is reporting. And we report very similar numbers. So we have 56 people hospitalized with COVID across our hospitals, with most of them being at Maine Medical Center. But they're also spread out in other different, more rural hospitals too, because, we're getting a phenomenon of having full hospitals too. So we're having to spread, have people with COVID admitted to different hospitals across the system. And there are another 12 who are being tested who are suspected to have it. So 56 plus another 12. And we have 25 of those 56 are in our intensive care units. And that's high. You know, we've been seeing the last month with this Delta variant that people are much sicker who are being hospitalized. It used to be about a quarter, maybe a fifth to a quarter of people hospitalized ended up in the ICU. And now it's 40 to 50% of them are ending up in the intensive intensive care unit. And out of those, it looks like 16 of them are on ventilators. And I know our ECMO beds, ECMO is something that only Maine Medical Center does, and that's, we've been pretty full with people with ECMO, which is a particular type of procedure that's done in people who are extremely, extremely, extremely ill. What we're also seeing is that the patients who are hospitalized continue to be much younger than they were a year, year and a half ago. People all the way from kids up and through 80s and 90s. So it's the whole range. We typically have at least one or two children who are hospitalized at any given time over the last several weeks, sometimes three children. And we've also seen pregnant women who are hospitalized. We've had several over the last, I think we have at any given time, usually one or two who are hospitalized with COVID. And then they're also primarily from rural Maine. They're where we're not getting high vaccination rates. They're coming from demographics and places, people who in rural Maine, people who are younger, people who are, you know, are coming from these pockets of unvaccinated. And almost everybody in our ICU, almost all the patients there are unvaccinated. I should mention that the few who are vaccinated, who are in our intensive care unit or in are hospitalized, that my understanding from our frontline workers is that many of them, if not most of them, have contracted this from somebody who's unvaccinated. So people who are fully vaccinated and hospitalized tend to be people with underlying conditions who are older, medically frail, and they are not necessarily mounting a sufficient response to the vaccines. And they're contracting it from people who are unvaccinated, who may be taking care of them or visiting with them.
So just to make it very, very clear, of the people who are the sickest that are in Maine Medical Center, the people who are in the intensive care unit, the vast majority were not vaccinated. And the very few who were not vaccinated contracted COVID from people who are unvaccinated. Very few who were vaccinated did indeed contract it from somebody who was not vaccinated.
That's what I've understood anecdotally from people who are more on the front line saying, you know, when they ask, when they're asking people what their exposure would be, is that they said, well, I was, somebody helped take care of me or somebody visited me who was unvaccinated and then told me a couple of days later, whoops, I've got COVID. So I'm not sure, we're not collecting the full data on that, but that's anecdotally what I've understood from several healthcare providers.
And Dr. Jarvis, what about you? Of the people in the intensive care unit, the people who are on the ventilators, what percentage of those people were not vaccinated?
Yeah, so of the 18 people that this morning were being taken care of our intensive care unit at Eastern Maine Medical Center, of those 18, 15 of those were unvaccinated individuals. So you can see it's a very wide, a very wide number of percentage-wise of people who are unvaccinated who are requiring that level of care. And of the 14 patients, of those 18, 14 of them are now on ventilators, and only one of those is a vaccinated individual. So the sickest of the sick are still remaining to be people who are unvaccinated because they lack the natural protection that need to do to fight this particular virus. And the vaccine is what helps us to get our own protection up to help fight off any, if you were to get infected, to help fight it off so you don't get that severe disease.
And I should also just mention too, real quickly, that Jim mentioned their test positivity rate. Ours is also at a record high of over 10%. That's a really, really high test positivity rate. I think the state's is more like 5.3%, but they also include, I believe, a lot of the colleges that are doing PCR tests for screening. So that I think makes the statewide test positivity rate a little bit artificially low. Whereas Jim's and my, you know, our health systems, Northern Light Health and Maine Health, are not doing those college screenings. So our rates are probably more indicative of what the real rate is. So that's a very high rate of test positivity rate and very concerning.
Well, let's go back to basics and talk about that for just a minute when we talk about a test positivity rate, because I think it's been a long time. It's one of those numbers that's been being thrown about around for so long now.
Dr. Mills, you were talking about how colleges are being counted. And what I'm guessing you're saying is someplace like, we'll throw out a college here, Colby College is testing students so regularly. If it's testing a student who is not, does not have COVID three times a week, that goes in as three negative tests. So it might be skewing. But so does this mean that every single person who is admitted to Maine Medical Center is tested for COVID-19 and that the number you're giving me is how many people test positive?
It's anybody in our system who has had symptoms and who are tested positive, as well as the Maine Medical people who are admitted to the hospital, no matter what they're admitted for, gets tested.
So,
they all go into the denominator.
If somebody comes in for appendicitis, are they tested for COVID-19?
Yes. Everybody come in with a broken leg, you get tested for COVID-19. And we're seeing a lot more of those. We have like 12 in our health system right now who were just coincidentally tested positive. But some of them then become sick. A number of them, they happen to be early on. They get in a car crash or have appendicitis or whatever. It may or may not be related to COVID. And then they become sick with COVID.
So Dr. Jarvis, your number you gave me at the beginning of the program was 11%. Is that right?
11.5%. That's correct.
So what you're saying is that 11.5% of the people who come into Northern Light Mercy system are testing positive for COVID-19, no matter why they're coming into the system, whether they're coming in to give birth, whether they're coming in for a broken leg, whether they're coming in for appendicitis. So are you suggesting that perhaps that's what the rate is out there in the general public and people just don't know it because they're asymptomatic?
Yeah, Jen, I want to clarify. So that's actually any way that they're getting a test through Northern Light Health. And so, of course, we run many swab and go sites across the state. And so that's individuals who may have symptoms and were either referred there by their own doctor or they themselves were getting tested, had wanted to get tested, or they're being tested for another reason. They've had an exposure to another individual, or they're testing for travel reasons. So that's all inclusive, not just those that are coming into our hospitals, but anybody else that we test out there in the community. So yes, this is a good judge of the community spread across our state. And what it's always been for us is, unfortunately, it has been the bellwether to tell us what's going to happen in the next week, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks. When we see the positivity rate climbing, we know that that's going to translate into hospitalizations and deaths 1 to 2 to 3 weeks after we see that number. And so we're continuing on a trajectory of going up in that case. I was just looking at the Mayo Clinic's predictions for the United States, and Maine, again, is they had predicted 2 weeks ago that Maine would double the number of cases it had per capita in that two-week period. They were off because that happened at the 13th day, not the 14th day. They expect that that's going to happen again in the next 2 weeks. Contrast that to Texas, which is, to date has been the state that's had the most cases per capita and the most hospitalizations. They are on the downswing from their peak. We are way behind where Texas is. We don't want to get as bad as where Texas had become.
Oh, boy. So I'm going to go to some of the questions coming in from the audience because there are so many coming in. I'll start here with Christine on Facebook. She asks, with the efficacy of the J&J vaccine, is there a point where one can switch and be fully vaccinated with another vaccine? I got the J&J in early March, and if I had the information I now have, I would have opted for a different vaccine. Can I wait a certain amount of time and begin anew and get the Moderna vaccine? Dr. Mills.
Great question, which means there's not a real clear answer to. But right now, they are rapidly doing studies. In fact, if you follow what the CDC comes out with and reports, and they are following the efficacy of these vaccines very closely. Actually, the J&J vaccine efficacy is pretty good. It's been holding its own, surprisingly. So surprisingly in that more because it's only one shot. And so I wouldn't do anything different right now. They should be coming out with recommendations in the next several weeks. And I know they're meeting, what week is the 17th? Gosh, I get the week.
It's the 13th today. It's soon.
Oh my gosh, the 13th. I know, it's crazy. So I think, this pandemic has done one thing to my time my sense of timing. So yes, so the 17th, I know the FDA CDC are meeting and should be coming out with some recommendations, whether it includes J&J or not, I'm not sure, but I would hold on right now. It is holding its efficacy fairly well. But I think we'll be knowing more soon.
We'll go to Brian, who's calling from Belfast. Hi, Brian, go ahead.
Hi, I was reading on the CDC website that both vaccinated and unvaccinated people spread COVID. So if a vaccinated person can spread COVID and they also have about the same viral loads, then that seems to be inconsistent with how dangerous this is. If vaccinated people, a caregiver can give it to their grandparent, why is being vaccinated help stop spreading the disease? And
Dr.
secondly,
Jarvis,
the masks that most people wear are only 10 to 20% effective. Can you address that too, please?
Dr. Jarvis.
Sure. Absolutely. I can address both those. So first and foremost, vaccinated individuals are far less likely to spread the disease than unvaccinated people. But nothing is 100% in this world. And so vaccines are not 100%. But these vaccines are more efficacious than vaccines that we use on a regular basis to prevent many, many other diseases. These are actually very incredible how effective they are. But when we talk about the Delta variant, and the Delta variant reproduces itself 1,000 times more than the original strain or the Alpha strain that we saw previously, that means there's just that much more virus out there. And so because there's that much more virus, it can overwhelm the immune system, even in vaccinated individuals. But to be clear, most people who are vaccinated are not going to get infected. Most of the people who are infected now are unvaccinated individuals. And so therefore, it is less likely for a vaccinated individual to spread the disease because they're less likely to contract the disease. But once they contract it, yes, they can spread it just like anybody else can. And that's no different than we have protections for any other disease that we use vaccination for. Okay, nothing is 100%, but these are as close to 100% as we've ever seen with a vaccine. So that's an important thing to remember. These are incredibly powerful vaccines that work very, very well. Same thing with the issue with the masking. We do know that masking, different levels of masking provide different levels of protection. Even if it was true, and I don't think it is true, that a two-layer cloth mask only provides 10% of safety, wouldn't you take that over 0% of safety? That's the things that are important. Everything is built upon all the other factors that we have in protecting our entire community. Vaccination is one pillar. Wearing a mask in public is one pillar. Washing our hands frequently is a pillar. And taking good care of ourselves and making sure that we don't go out when we're sick is another pillar. All of those things help to decrease the amount of virus in our communities and therefore help to decrease the spread. It's like having brakes on your car, having a seatbelt, and having an airbag. Not one of those will protect you from having an accident, but all of them will protect you from becoming seriously hurt if you're in an accident. Vaccine is like the brakes. It just protects you in one layer of things. Then we have to do our masking, we have to do our hand washing, and the like.
Dr. Mills.
I'd just like to add, this is such a common misperception that the viewer, listener mentioned, and I agree with everything Jim said. I'd also like to add that the main US CDC came out with data on the Delta variant on Friday, showing that the unvaccinated have a 5 times increased risk of infection, greater than 10 times increased risk of hospitalization and death. So I just want to make sure that people realize that, yes, as Jim said, somebody who's fully vaccinated can contract it, maybe can also transmit it, but not nearly to the extent that somebody who is unvaccinated. The other reason why we think that's true, and the listener mentioned the data on the levels of virus in the nose and the nasal pharynx of vaccinated versus unvaccinated. Subsequent studies show that, when this makes sense, that even though the Delta virus does tend to replicate at very high levels in the nasal pharynx and nose and back of the mouth, in vaccinated and unvaccinated, the vaccinated clear it much more quickly. So while they have it in their nose and they could transmit it during that time, they also clear it because those antibodies that, once the virus starts going through the mucous membrane, frames into the rest of the body, those antibodies get, you know, get ramped up and fight it. And therefore, and they've, what they've shown is that those viral loads dramatically reduce within a few hours after the person who's fully vaccinated contracts COVID. So they're not as contagious for as long, nearly as long, where somebody who's unvaccinated can carry viral loads, very high viral loads for a long, for days. So it's a really common misperception. I just wanted to hit that one again, because vaccination is working.
Sure, and that, I think a lot of people are numbers people, and to have that number that five times more effective is a really clear and five times more effective and 10 times more likely, less likely to be hospitalized. Really clear numbers that are easy to get your head around. Brian, thanks so much for your call. If you have a question for Dr. Mills and Dr. Jarvis, our phone number, of course, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org or find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from BCM Environmental and Land Law. Focused on Northern New England environmental law and land issues, bcmenvirolaw.com. By H.M. Payson, proud sponsor of the 50th anniversary of Masterpiece on Maine Public Television. And Downeast Acadia, inviting you to experience a new leaf-peeping adventure on the Blackwoods Scenic Byway. TrueMaine.net.
I'm Paola Hernandez, a member of the Maine Public News Connect team. Each week, Maine Public News stories are translated into Spanish, French, Portuguese, and Somali to provide important news to Maine's diverse communities. Maine Public ha creado un nuevo servicio de noticias que ustedes apreciarán. Cada semana ofrecemos videos cortos en español que ofrecen noticias de Maine de la semana. Estas noticias brindan información importante para nuestra comunidad. Los videos de noticias de Maine Public News Connect están disponibles todos los viernes en la tarde en mainepublic.org, así como en Facebook y YouTube. Please help us spread the word about this exciting new service. Thank you.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Joining me today, two leading physicians to answer your questions about the resurging pandemic and the latest guidelines. Dr. Jim Jarvis, a family physician and system incident command for Northern Light Health, and Dr. Dora Mills, chief health improvement officer at Maine Health. Her background is in pediatrics. Share your comments or questions by email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment on our Facebook page or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. An email here from Bill. My wife is scheduled for a non-urgent out-of-patient procedure within the Maine Med system, in and out in 3 or 4 hours. We are in our 70s and vaccinated. Should we consider postponing? Dr. Mills.
You know, it's a very good question, and I don't know the answer. And it depends, I think, on your own level of risk and what the procedure is and all that. I would talk to your primary care provider. I would give them a call today and try to talk that over with them, because they're going to know your level of risk and what kind of risk the procedure, you know, incurs as well. So great question, but I think it's something you should talk to your PCP about.
And Dr. Jarvis, this leads to another question. How is this surge in cases affecting your hospital system at large? I know that Maine Health has postponed some procedures already. Is the same going on at Northern Light? And are you worried that you're going to have to postpone more as you did in the beginning of the pandemic?
Yeah, so if you remember in the beginning of the pandemic, the reason why we were postponing wasn't so much because of capacity issues here in the state of Maine. It was more because we didn't know about transmissibility of the virus, and we wanted to make sure we were protecting everybody as best that we could. Now we know a whole lot more, so we can keep patients safe as they enter into our facilities. It's why we all require masking of all of our patients, visitors, and staff and providers. And so we know how to protect people. But we are concerned about capacity this time around. As we talked about, our numbers are higher now than we saw before, and we expect them to continue to get higher. At Northern Light Health, currently, we are reviewing any non-urgent procedure, meaning a procedure that doesn't need to be done right this minute, to determine whether or not it can be delayed, particularly those that are have a high likelihood of requiring hospitalization. We haven't had to postpone many, we've only had to postpone a handful on a case-by-case basis, but we continue to review that, and we continue to be worried about capacity concerns.
I will go to Maggie, who's calling from York Beach. Hi, Maggie. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, Jennifer. My question is, how do you deal with the upcoming holidays this fall? Last year, people were wearing masks, and they surged in January. May was great in Maine. And then vacationers came, I'd go to stores, nobody was wearing masks. And do you see this as another potential spike, you know, once people start coming home and just because of the vaccine, they feel safe. And I personally know 5 or 6 people who've had the vaccine who've gotten really sick.
Dr. Jarvis.
Yeah, so and of course, anytime that people are traveling or getting together in large numbers, there's a concern there that that the virus will spread. And so those need to be things that we consider. We also know that in Maine, we start to have cooler weather before the rest of the country. And so people are indoors a little bit more. I will tell you that I continue to wear my mask when I go inside in a public location, as does my family. And it's my strong recommendation that everybody do that, whether they're vaccinated or not. Because again, as we talked about, it's the amount of virus that's out in the community, out in the air, that's what causes the transmission from one person to another. And so wearing a mask just helps to limit that, along with all the other good things that we've talked about. So it's a concern. It's certainly something that we talk about both from a health system standpoint as a state. And you see it playing out in many other communities around the country where they have had large gatherings and large events. And then sure enough, a week or two later, start to see a spike in numbers.
Okay, we'll go to June, who's calling from Caribou. Hi, June. Go ahead.
Oh, yes, hi. I'm calling because I'm very concerned about the demonization of the unvaccinated, especially the term the pandemic of the unvaccinated, which is a double entendre. And, you know, it's almost calling people the virus. And we should just know from history that this can turn very, very dangerous. And it's painting people as viruses. And I was saying that also when they bring up the concerns, I wish that we would have a really full, open public debate that addresses the concerns instead of just suppressing them. Because whenever I hear the concerns of people who don't want to get vaccinated, it's never what their real concerns are. It's like they're putting up red herrings and straw men saying, oh, they just think they're going to be tracked and everything. So they're not bringing up some of the really educated people bringing up important concerns. I'm a person who can't get vaccinated, and I know and I believe in vaccinations. But as I started to look into some of these concerns, I saw there's really things that I would like to see addressed, and I feel like the American people should be owed that. This is putting something, you know, into people's bodies, and I just wish that Congress would open up and that they would have scientists just speaking very freely, again, addressing, not suppressing, and also not minimizing the concerns and making it into complete quackery, because they're saying things, you know, like it's tracking, it's just insanity. But people like even Dr. Christiane Northrup, who was on PBS
June, I want to give Dr. Jarvis has to leave in a couple minutes, so I want to give him a chance to answer before he goes, and then give Dr. Mills a chance to answer as well. Dr. Jarvis, go ahead.
Yeah, so thank you. Thank you for this wonderful question, and I agree. So I do many one-on-one discussions with individuals who have concerns or questions about vaccination, and I agree. We need to be open and honest and talk about those. Most individuals, their concerns really relate to safety of the vaccines and the feeling that these are new vaccines. And while it's true that these vaccines are new for this particular virus, because this particular virus is new, the technology used for these vaccines is not new. We also know these are the most studied vaccinations ever. In fact, just recently, there was a report that came out of a joint presentation between the Kaiser Permanente group and the CDC of over 3 million people who have been vaccinated and monitored and matched with 3 million people who had not been vaccinated. So we have excellent data. These are incredibly safe vaccines. The fears and concerns people have had and voiced about the vaccines have just not proven to be true. And those are good things. There is no problem with the vaccine causing infertility or miscarriage. Those are two that I hear often, particularly amongst young people, as being a cause for concern. I've heard the concern of, well, it could turn my immune system on and cause bad things. Yes, it turns your immune system on, your immune system to protect you against COVID-19, not for anything else beyond that. And those are two of the things that I've heard concerns about. I think partly is because these are so well-studied vaccines now, because of the sheer volume of individuals who have had the vaccine. We have certainly picked up some things, particularly the issues around pericarditis or inflammation around the lining of the heart, blood clots. But those are in a very, very small number of people, typically in a very narrow focused portion of the population. And we know that the risk of COVID-19 is actually far greater than the risk of the vaccines themselves. So that's the discussion I often have with people. And then you talk about the issue around vaccinated versus unvaccinated. And unfortunately, yes, it is true that it is unvaccinated individuals who right now are the source of the surge, because they are being infected at a much higher rate, causing much more virus to be out there, and unfortunately spreading that virus even to people who are vaccinated.
Dr. Jarvis, I understand you have to leave us for another important meeting, so I appreciate you being with us for 35 minutes, Dr. James Jarvis with Northern Light Health. Don't worry, we'll get you
back in a couple weeks.
Thank you
for being so understanding.
See you, Jim.
And Dr. Mills, I'm sure you would like to respond to June's concern that people who are not vaccinated are being demonized, and she's someone who's not able to be vaccinated.
Yeah, and I don't think that any of us mean to demonize anybody who's unvaccinated. I agree with everything Jim said, and we've been running Zoom town halls with our employees and actually with others who want to attend to answer questions about the vaccine. And I think I've done over 40 of those since late November. And we've also done a lot of one-on-ones. So particularly right now, where the vaccine mandates are coming up, both the federal and the state ones, I've been meeting with a number of our employees to answer their questions. I think when employees, at least, or the people I talk to, tend to have sometimes safety or efficacy questions. They're worried about the safety. They're worried about, are they really that effective? Because they've heard the rumor, the misinformation that somebody, a listener called in a few minutes ago about, if you can still transmit it if you're vaccinated. Well, yeah, but not nearly as much as you can. So if you show them the data on safety and efficacy, it just feels like we're able to move people and they're able to get vaccinated. So it seems that we've had very good success with people who have one of those two concerns. What we've moved in to more recently are people who are just very angry, who are just against government mandates. And sometimes it's harder to move that because it's a real strong emotional response. And what we've been trying to point out is that, do you wear a seatbelt when you drive a car? You don't drink and drive? Have you gotten the measles vaccine? Because measles, rubella, chickenpox vaccines have been required for years and years of healthcare workers. And a lot of times they'll say, well, yes, of course. I'm like, well, so this is kind of the same thing, and sometimes we're able to move them that, but certainly there's not an intention to demonize people, but it is a tough, rope to walk because of the fact that the surges are caused by unvaccinated. This is really a pandemic surge of the unvaccinated. And yes, people who are vaccinated can contract COVID and are, but the people who are really sick and the people who are transmitting it by far are people who are unvaccinated. So it's a tight rope to walk, to not demonize them and try to meet them where they're at and be very understanding of their issues and try to provide information that's science-based. But it's also very tragic. I mean, Jim and I are also seeing people who are dying in our hospitals or who have been, or very, very ill. And our nurses and our doctors are telling us, they are unvaccinated and they're dying. Please do whatever you can to try to get people to get vaccinated.
June, thanks so much for your call. We are going to take another quick break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Achaia Savings Bank, committed to helping customers find their yes as part of a mission to move Maine forward. MachiaSavings.bank. By Maine Seacoast Mission in times like these, standing with Maine's isolated coastal and island communities. SeacoastMission.org. And Maine Coast Sea Vegetables, offering a variety of wild seaweed harvested from the North Atlantic for 50 seasons. SeaVeg.com.
I'm Scott Tong. Half of transgender people report being mistreated by medical professionals. We'll talk with a patient who was considering a colonoscopy.
The gastroenterologist was asking some really unnecessary questions about my sex life, and I ended up canceling the procedure.
That is next time on Here and Now.
Here and Now, coming up shortly after Maine Calling from 12 noon until 2 here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public is pleased to be a media sponsor of Maine State Music Theater's Jersey Boys. Jersey Boys will take you on a journey behind the music of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, a story of four blue-collar kids with a dream. Maine State Music Theater's Jersey Boys will be performed at the Westbrook Performing Arts Center now through September 19th. For complete details and tickets to the performance, please visit mainepublic.org and click on Events.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. My guest today is Dr. Dora Mills with Maine Health, here to answer your questions about the face of the rapidly rising COVID cases, the Delta variant, and more. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. We'll go to Bill, who's calling from Raymond. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I do have a concern because I'm probably many people that has been put on the back burner for an operation, and a lot of people are in need of moderate to pretty severe operations with the COVID and everything. Their operations have been delayed. My question is, has there been any consideration whatsoever to have the military come in and set up field hospitals to relieve the hospitals from COVID patients, so they can tend to other serious illnesses?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm so sorry that your own surgery has been postponed. The challenge with the military coming in and putting up a field hospital is they will set one up, but we have to staff it. So we don't, some states have a National Guard medical unit that can come in and staff somewhat of a medical field hospital. We do have some medics in our National Guard unit, but we don't have a medical unit per se for our National Guard. So one of the challenges is that we have a workforce shortage across the country, probably worse in Maine, probably partly because we're the oldest state in the nation. So a lot more people retired the last year and a half. And we just have had a worsening, workforce shortage in general. And you can hear that in the restaurant industry, other hospitality industries, just everywhere. It's hard to go. I don't think I've been to almost any retail establishment without there being a help wanted sign there. But that puts us in a bind because we can't really staff a field hospital either. So we're one of the reasons that we've had to postpone surgeries is one is because if people need a hospital bed after their surgery, because they're going to have to stay a couple of nights, we sometimes don't have beds available. And then second of all, because of staffing and that, we may not have enough staff to maintain for surgeries. So we're having to redeploy staff from surgeries, for instance, to helping to take care of other patients so that we can take care of COVID patients. So that's, kind of a long-winded answer, but that's kind of the basics of it, is that we have considered that. We've been in talks several times over the last year and a half with the state on that, but we've come up across the same issues each time when we've had discussions over the last year and a half, is that we don't really have the staff for such a field hospital.
Thanks so much for your good question, Bill. I'm sure there are other people with the same question. I hope you are able to have your surgery soon. I'm going to go to Alana on Facebook, who writes, to all those hospital staff who have been working like crazy the last year and a half, we see you. We thank you. And Dr. Mills, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, there were all sorts of tributes. We, of course, saw in New York City people applauding every night. I think it was at 7 o'clock. We saw people volunteering, leaving meals for people at Maine Medical Center, putting flowers outside of the emergency room. Are we seeing that kind of thing still?
Well, I'm very touched by that comment because, yes, our frontline workers are kind of feeling that, from the people I talk with, they're saying, yeah, it is different this time, and that there aren't really, you know, I think there are people like the listener who does say, oh, yes, we do view them still as heroes, and it's helpful. And I do. Oh, my goodness. My heart goes out to all of my colleagues who are on the front lines and taking care of COVID patients and other patients. I think one thing that they have said repeatedly to me is, if there's one thing that we can all do to honor them, is to please help get people vaccinated, because, and to mask. Those are the two, you know, there's different layers of protection, but we know that vaccination and masking are the two strongest layers, particularly vaccination. So, and I've heard that repeatedly from physician and nursing colleagues in our hospital, saying, please, if you do anything, please, for them to honor us, please, like, please get people to get a vaccination and masking, because that's going to help people stay out of the hospital, and will ultimately honor them, because it'll make their jobs easier. But thank you for those comments, and I will certainly pass those on to my colleagues who are on the front lines, because they truly are my heroes for sure.
We'll go to Heather, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Heather. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you today?
Good.
Oh, good. I just was wondering if you had any comments or thoughts in regards to schooling, because my children were personally asked at outside lunch by their teacher if they had been vaccinated. And I just felt like that was a very private question to ask minor children.
How old are your children?
They just turned 14.
Yeah. I don't, you know, I'm not in the education side of things, but so I don't know what the role is of teachers in asking for a vaccine status to students. So that's a bit, I don't know, but I do know that I certainly like to know the people I'm around, if they're vaccinated. I do ask. I mean, I just, I feel like because even though I'm fully vaccinated, again, people who are fully vaccinated can contract it. It's much less of a case, much less risk of contracting it. But I certainly like to know, because I just want to have those layers of protection around me. And frankly, I'm not with people who are not vaccinated. I feel like it's too much of a risk right now. This Delta variant is so highly contagious that you're either going to get Delta or you get vaccinated. It's one or the other, as Dr. Shaw said last week. So in terms of the appropriateness of a teacher asking a student, I can't really comment on that. I don't know. So I think that's something you might want to talk to the school administration about, or somebody else about.
Heather, thanks so much for your question. Email here from Jessica. What are the current guidelines for masking outdoors in high spread areas of the state? For example, children in rec soccer with an immune compromised family member.
Yeah, so that's a great question. So my litmus test is, I don't want to share breathed air with people, particularly if I don't know their vaccination status. So this is kind of a funky term, but sharing breathed air. So something, you know, outdoors, we know, particularly if it's sunny, that the UV radiation tends to knock the virus down, and outdoors, it tends to dissipate very quickly and get diluted. So outdoor spaces tend to be well ventilated as well. So they're much less risk for those reasons I just mentioned. But you can be in really crowded outdoor spaces and and sharing breathe air with people, and then, you know, can contract it. I saw a picture of a outdoor concert, I think up at Bangor from several weeks ago, that people were just extremely crowded together and nobody was masked. And I thought, well, they are definitely sharing breathe air with each other. So on the soccer field, that's a different story. So now, if they're vaccinated, that helps. So if they're vaccinated themselves, if the child is old enough, is 12 or older to be vaccinated, then that lowers the risk right there. if you have a very severely immunocompromised person at home, and they're particularly if the child is not vaccinated, I would strongly suggest that they wear a mask. And while they're playing soccer, I know last year that kids wore masks all the time while they were playing soccer. And I see some kids now who are out around in Portland playing soccer who have masks on. So it does help to reduce their chances. Though on a soccer field, it depends. You know, I know my son plays soccer, and there's usually, they pick up soccer, it's like five on a team, and they're mostly vaccinated. But if you've got really crowded, you know, full teams, and they're more crowded together than and they're not vaccinated, then the risk goes up.
We'll go to Mina calling from Belfast. Hi, Mina. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi. I'm calling to find out. I want to get my yearly mammogram. I am vaccinated, but I don't know if I know that the technician, you know, they all wipe down the equipment and wear masks. But I don't know if the technician will be vaccinated, and because it's not mandatory. And some people in healthcare do not want to get vaccinated. I'm very concerned about getting a vaccine. I mean, about getting a mammogram right now, because of that. There's close proximity to the technician. I'm worried about the Delta variant, and I would like to know if it's safe to do that, yep. Or should I wait until I get a booster?
Mina, when is your appointment?
Tomorrow. I can reschedule, and that's it. I just feel responsible, and I like to do things for myself, but this is a concern.
That's a very excellent question. And again, it's sort of like the soccer question. There's a lot of depends. So you're fully vaccinated. It also depends a bit on what your risk factors are for contracting COVID. So if you've been, if you are medically frail or elderly, then you definitely want to, you want to consider that in the scheme of things. You can call ahead and ask if the people overseeing your mammogram are vaccinated or not. You can wear a mask. You have to wear a mask anyway. They will be wearing a mask. You could also wear an N95 mask. So if your risk factors for breast cancer are somewhat high, that's another risk factor you want to consider. And your risk factors for COVID are not that high, or severe disease for COVID are not that high. Then you can ask ahead of time, but you can also ask that you can wear an N95 or a KN95. You can buy them over the counter. I keep boxes of them around for myself and my two young adult children. So when we go to a place like an indoor crowded place where we think there may be people who are unvaccinated, we wear our KN95s or N95s. And then you could also ask them to wear, if they're not going to tell you what their vaccination status, you can just, they have N95s at the healthcare setting. You can just say, well, I would really appreciate it if you'd wear an N95 while you're doing my mammogram. So those are a couple of options. You can also postpone it until this Delta variant is simmered down some more, particularly if your risks are high for severe COVID and you're not getting answers from the healthcare provider that they're vaccinated or not.
And Dr. Mills, won't it be that by the end of October, all healthcare workers will have to be vaccinated?
Yes. So yes. And of course, President Biden just announced this as well. So the independent medical practices right now are exempt from the state mandate, though some of them have already taken it on anyway, but I believe the federal mandate will supersede that. So so you've had to kind of figure out your own risk for severe COVID, your risk for breast cancer. I hate to see people postponing preventative health care, but you can also do something around making sure you wear an N95 or K95, make sure they are, if they're not going to tell you the vaccine status, or maybe they're vaccinated.
Mina, good luck in making your decision about tomorrow. Thanks for your call. We're going to go to Ben, who is calling from Durham. Hi, Ben. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Hi, Dr. Mills. Just real quick, I'm just trying to get inside the head of people who are first responders, especially like EMS and firefighters. Like, how do they square themselves with this notion of not taking the vaccine when they took an oath to do no harm? If I had a heart attack and EMS is my first sort of opportunity to get medical care on my way to the hospital, and I have a choice between having somebody who's vaccinated or unvaccinated give me that first bit of care I need that should be critical, I'm going to want somebody who's vaccinated. And so how do they square themselves with this notion having taken an oath? Just curious.
Yeah, it's a great question. And the ones I've talked with who are unvaccinated or were unvaccinated, some of them are just, they have really, there's so much misinformation being circulated that many of them have seen this misinformation and are really concerned about whether they're getting experimental vaccine or not. And most of the time when I've talked with them, I know Jim has had the same experience. We say, there are, about 250 million Americans who've gotten this one of these vaccines over the last year, last 9 months or so. And, this is not experimental. It's been one of the most, as Jim said, it's been one of the most studied vaccines on the face of the planet. And I've been heavily, heavily studied. So when we go through the safety and the efficacy and refute a lot of the misinformation that they've heard, that seems to really move people to getting vaccinated. So I think there's just been, unfortunately, so much misinformation and unfortunately has been widely circulated around the EMS and firefighting community for one reason or another. And others, we have a number of other healthcare providers as well. So, but it's tough when you've got a loved one in the hospital or, being taken care of by EMS and you're wondering whether people are vaccinated or not. And you realize that many times patients cannot be masked. So masking is not the full answer because patients often are not in a position to be masked if they're having breathing difficulties, for instance, and they're sick. And then if the healthcare providers or EMS or whatever are wearing a surgical mask and it's not that well fitted, it's effective, but not that effective. So particularly if the patient's unmasked. So yeah, it's a lot of, unfortunately, I don't think with all the pandemic preparedness that we did over the years that people anticipated so much misinformation being circulated as there has been the last year or so.
An email here from Brad. Could you comment on the relative safety of small groups of vaccinated individuals spending time together indoors?
Yeah, so that's a good question. And I have to kind of deal with that myself in my own personal life, just trying to figure out, okay. And as I said, I ask people all the time, I say, are you fully vaccinated? They say, of course I am. So before I get together with them, the risk is smaller. Obviously if you're fully vaccinated and people are getting together, I do take other precautions. So there are, these layers of protection. So vaccination is the thick cheese layer of protection, but then there's other layers in the Swiss cheese approach, including masking, distancing, ventilation, and testing. So right now we're just fortunate to have a good weather fall. So I make sure I was with some people over the weekend. There were several of us having dinner together. We were all fully vaccinated, but we were in a cabin with two doors and windows. I had all the windows open, all the doors open, a fan going. and then we sat apart, we sat 6 feet apart or so from each other, 3 to 6 feet apart as we could, as far distance as we could. So masks when we weren't eating. So there are these other layers that you can put on even if you're fully vaccinated.
All right. Well, Dr. Dora Mills, thank you so much as always for joining us on Maine Calling. And thank you also to Dr. James Jarvis, who had to leave us a little bit earlier. Today's sound engineer was Sandra Harris. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and by Cindy Hahn. And this program will be rebroadcast tonight at 7. Tomorrow on the program, we discuss how trust in our government has eroded over time. And we'll discuss a new book by a University of Maine professor that looks at intentional sowing of mistrust by government, some people in government. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.